The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
And we are back here. The second hour of the program is live. We're always excited to talk to Coach Mark Stoops of the University of Kentucky. And Coach, getting ready for yet another season. And it's good to have you on here. How are you?
Thanks, Paul. Doing pretty good. How about yourself? How's things?
Things are okay. I'll spare you all the how different is this year than last, but I'm sure it is nice to put most of that behind you.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's been really good. You know, first week of spring, we're four practices in. We got our fifth practice tomorrow, and it's been nice. We've been, relatively uninterrupted, for the most part, getting tested just once a week. And, so getting closer to normal. But I really like our football team. I really like the way things have started. You know, we have quite a few changes in our program, and I like where we're at. You know, obviously we have a lot of work to do, but it's always fun. This time of year is just a lot of fun for us. You know, you go through the winter and try to develop your players, make them better, you know, bigger, stronger, and all those things, and then get out on the practice field in the spring. And, you don't have the pressure of game planning, so it's a fun part of our work, just developing our players and trying to get them better. So been a good start.
I know coaches always want to look ahead, but I think all of us, I'll include myself, tried to understand your season, but until it was over, I'm not sure we understood the struggles internally that were going on. And I know you're not one for excuses, but I think from a distance, I think the average critic didn't understand, how big of a loss Coach Schlarman was, and then ultimately his passing. Can you talk about that for a second? Because it just seemed like that really hung over the season.
Yeah, it really was, Paul. It was, you're right. I mean, we all want to look ahead and look towards the future, and really that's been all of our concentration, but it is a fair question, and it is the truth. I mean, the season's over. It is what it is. I was proud of our players, the way we finished. The guys fought through a lot of adversity, like most teams in the country. It wasn't easy, not only on us, it wasn't easy on anybody. And, it started early, with, Chris Oates, one of my best players, probably a future NFL football player, middle linebacker, has a stroke. And then Coach Schlarman, and we watched Coach Schlarman in his struggle for a couple years. And, it did take its toll on our football team. It was very hard. He was a guy that played at Kentucky. He's been with me since day one. He was loved in our community. He was loved by our players. And it was hard to watch him go through that struggle and watch him deteriorate and watch him, slowly die right in front of us was hard to watch. And, definitely took its toll. It was a hard year in general. You add that on top of it, and, certainly was a difficult time.
Coaches always want to go back and dissect, but because of the circumstances, were you happier just to push that one behind you? And you have new staff, you have a lot of new players, just move ahead and let it go.
You have to. I think we always need to analyze things and learn and grow. Take all the good, take the bad. You have to, take things from each situation and just grow as a person, grow as a coach and as an organization. And you have to shoulder the responsibility that comes with it, the good and the bad. And, there's definitely things, that I have to analyze and look at, and whether it's fair or not fair, I had to make changes. And so now it is full steam ahead and just pressing on. You take those experiences and you learn and do the best you can. I love the coaches I had in place, but I definitely felt like there was some change needed, and it is what it is, and now we're pushing forward.
You come from a coaching family, and I know that's probably one of the toughest parts of it. And I'm not asking you to get into the specificity of it, but how do you know when things are not going well? And I ask you that normally you could look at it analytically, but these are gentlemen that are part of your family. It's not maybe it's yeah. not as easy to see sometimes.
No, it's not. I think it was difficult for me. Sometimes like you understand, and you've seen it, you've been around and watched it, and you know, sometimes things are very cut and dry. You know, it's whether it be a head coach or an assistant, you need to make a change, and it is what it is, and it's a relatively easy decision. That wasn't the case with my guys. They had been with me, and they had been a part of a lot of good things and helped me build this program and do some really good things. Not only were they personal friends and, you know, people you get close to, but they also are very qualified, very good coaches. Sometimes it just doesn't work. Sometimes you need to make a change. I have to, I'm part of that. I understand that as the head coach, you are part of, all the things. If they're not working to your liking, then, I'm a part of that. I realize that and I understand that. But, so it was with a lot of thought and a lot of discussion. And, ultimately I felt like I made some moves that I had to do. And, and quite a bit of that I consulted with Eddie. Eddie Grant is a fantastic coach, been around the SEC forever. He's a wonderful coach and a personal friend of mine. And, I consulted a lot with him about it. And, ultimately we came up with the understanding that I probably needed to make a complete change and move in a different direction.
Talking to Coach Mark Stoops, who has been in Kentucky since 2013. Coach, not to get you on the business of coaching, but there were four changes last year. I mean, you're starting when the coaches finally converge again in person. You're going to be sitting at the far end of the table with Saban as one of the most senior coaches in this league. Speaking about not making too many friends, that's a room that changes more than almost any in America.
Yeah, it really does. It's always an experience, going into those head coaches meetings, and there's a lot of new faces year to year, that's for sure. So I really appreciative of the job I have, and it really motivates you, Paul, to get back to work, because nobody's interested in taking a step back in this league. You know that everybody's full steam ahead, pressing on and, doing things at a very high level. And, we certainly are here. I certainly just trying to put my head down and go to work and do the very best I can and put a quality product on the field. And, there's always going to be some ups and some downs, but I really feel good about the program as a whole, where we're at. And I feel like, we really have some pieces in place. I really like our players. And, I love their mentality. And it's really nice for me when I bring in new coaches and guys that have been at successful programs and around our league and other leagues, and they come in and they look at the culture of our football team, and it kind of reinforces all the things that we're doing. And it kind of reinforces that we are trying to do the right things and put a really good culture in place. I really have to credit our players because they are – they're a fun group to coach. It makes it exciting for me to get up and go to work every day and to try to help them get better. So we're all in this together, and it's been fun.
Coach, for so long, maybe not that long, but your first couple of years, you were trying to get the infrastructure in. You were trying to get to a level. And then finally, a couple of years ago, you had the whole nation watching as you're playing for a divisional title on a gorgeous afternoon in Lexington. Where are you now in terms of what is the next frontier for the University of Kentucky football program?
Yeah, I think, just continue to progress. It's hard, as you know and understand. You talk to all of us coaches all the time, and, it's hard to put a win-loss, on that to define us, with how many wins or all that. I feel like, I had to make some changes. I feel good about them. Now we got a lot of work to do. But I feel like, we're, we're going to continue to get better. We're going to continue to battle. We want to compete to win each and every Saturday. And I know that's a coaching cliche, but it's true. I mean, I feel like we have a good team. You're always looking for, maybe a guy here, a guy there, a difference maker, a guy that can help push you to another level. I feel good. I feel like, we have to, we have to play better at the quarterback position, but we also have to put him in a better position. And hopefully we're doing that. And I feel good about the guys that are competing for that job. I feel like, you get a transfer like Wandell Robinson, a guy that come in and he's a difference maker. He's a guy we've been missing. So, and then you get a guy like Josh Ali who returns for a sixth year in Luke Fortner. So, I think we have a lot of good pieces in place, but you're also looking for a player here, a player there to be a difference maker that can win some one-on-one matchups. Once again, you watch it, you see it around our league. There's obviously very good coaching, there's very good programs, but then there's also difference makers. There's guys that are going to go up and make plays in one-on-one situations that you just can't teach. That's between them and God.
Always good to catch up, Coach. Thanks for making the time, and all the best this spring, and hope to see you again very, very soon.
Thanks, Paul. Take care.
You got it. Coach Mark Stoops, always great to come on and share with us the Kentucky story, and we are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Welcome back. Great to have you here Wednesday afternoon, and JJ is up next on the calls from Knoxville. Hello, JJ.
Yes, sir. Best regards, Paul. I was sitting here thinking the way some of your early calls have gone today, maybe give you a little something else to think about. Remember, we talked about Tom Seiler and Tom Anderson in Knoxville, the sports writers?
Oh, yes.
Well, if you had let Seiler hook you up with Anderson, I understand at one time Anderson's sports column was responsible for about 70% of the paper circulation. So just think, you could be sitting there at your computer just writing your sports column, and how simple life would be.
Yeah, JJ, there was a time in my life early on that I thought the greatest job in the world would be working in Knoxville covering the Vols. And there was only one possibility. It was about 9 or 10 years after I left town. I happened to be in Gatlinburg for a journalism meeting, and the editor of the Knoxville paper gave me a ride back to the airport because there had been a snowstorm, and he had just made a change, and we briefly talked about it, and it didn't have the right feel, and I'm not sure they really thought I was the right person either, but they ended up hiring John Adams. and he's still there, and I'm still here. So I think it worked out pretty well.
I believe you said that Anderson was already gone.
Right, he was.
Your time in Knoxville.
He was,
correct?
But I knew who he was.
And I'm not sure, but I do know that I was there in school in the 50s, and I think everybody bought the Knoxville Journal to read Anderson.
Yeah, you know, the Knoxville Journal, when I was in school, was the morning paper, and, you know, I think he was gone before I even got there. I remember Ben,
right.
Ben and Russ Bebb.
Ben Bird, yeah.
Yeah, Ben was probably one of my favorite guys to read. He was just so easy to. And then the New Sentinel had Siler and the great Marvin West.
Well, again, I just was sitting here thinking about that when I saw how some of your early calls went. So I just
JJ, there are days when I wonder if I should have stayed in sports writing, and today is one of those.
I just thought I'd run that by you.
Thank
today,
you,
Paul.
No, when I left the newspaper business, not to wax poetic here on somebody else's time, but. I wondered if my career was over. I wasn't sold on this broadcasting part of life because the newspaper industry seemed so rich, it seemed so pure, and today it seems to be in a lot of trouble. Let's get back to the calls and check out Brett, who is in Kentucky. Hey, Brett, thanks. Good afternoon.
Paul. I haven't talked to you in about a year. How are you?
Brett, I am doing wonderful. How about you?
You look great.
Well, thank you.
Well, hey, so let's talk about Calipari. And I've been saying this for the last couple of years, and, well, since 15, when we went to the national championship, Kentucky went to the national or the Final Four.
Right.
And those boys from Wisconsin just whooped the floor with us. And I said, Calipari needs, you know, his magician, because it's a magic show that he's running in Kentucky. It's a magic show. So it's, you know, hey, look at here. Look at all the NBA recruits. I said to all my friends and family, I said, hey, we need a coach. A recruiter can only get you so far. Well, what's happened since then, Duke wanted part of it, you know, and all these other schools wanted to have that Calipari, you know, formula, the algorithm to get NBA players. So it has really split our pie chart of getting, you know, big-time talent in Kentucky. And if you can see, you know, our last recruiting classes, we're not getting, you know, the Anthony Davises and, you know, all those guys aren't walking through the door anymore. So what do you think? What do you think we should do? Because, you know, you can't say, oh, get rid of Calipari. That it's crazy. But it seems like he just doesn't have a foundation under him of coaches. I know Kenny Payne's a good coach, but it just seems like, you know, Orlando Antuigua, I think, you know, being gone has really hurt the program. It's no surprise that, you know, where he's at right now is doing really well, or they were doing well. So what do you think about that? And then I miss you, and hopefully we can see each other soon.
Brett, thank you very much. And I think you've raised a really interesting conundrum. You have a great coach, but nobody wants to hear about what somebody has done. That doesn't work in today's world, especially in high-stakes business. You can't get rid of Calipari. You start with that premise. He's got a $54 million buyout. You hope that things turn around, but pressure starts to mount. You know, you start looking back and go, okay, well, when was the last time? And Kentucky isn't measured by tournament games or tournament wins in the SEC. It's measured by getting to the Final Four. That's the ultimate barometer. And you know, when the 21-22 season begins, it will have been since 2015. And you know, every year that goes by where something goes wrong, it gets more difficult. I can throw up the Elite Eight games against North Carolina and Auburn. Those don't matter to fans. Fans only know what's in front of them. And so John probably does need a better staff. You're right. Those are critically important things. And he's had great staff over the years. He's put a lot of coaches into head coaching positions. Some have not worked out, but some have. But I'm not going to be the one that puts pressure on John Calipari. He's too good a coach for someone who doesn't know half of what he knows or a millionth of what he knows. But ultimately, you have to put it on the board. And I think it becomes even more difficult when you have new guns like you have in the SEC right now. It, you know, it was one thing you measured him against Kentucky, but John's a young man compared to Krzyzewski. He could very well be measured after this season against Nate Oates and Musselman, depending on how the next 2 weeks work out. Let's continue with more calls and check in with Zach, who is in Alabama. Hey, Zach.
Hey, Paul.
How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Pretty well, thank you. What's going on today?
I want to talk about Alabama football, but before that, I'd like to ask you a couple questions that are maybe a little more on the personal side, but may give us a little bit of insight into to your life.
Sure.
Okay. So out of your 30-some-odd years in Alabama, in Birmingham, just give us maybe a fond memory, and then also when ESPN hired you in 2013 to, I don't know if pioneer is the right word, but to be a part of this little thing called the SEC Network, just take us through to from that point to where you are now, or where that network is now, and how has that impacted you?
Well, Zach, the first part of the question I'll answer succinctly, because no matter what I do in my career, I think a lot of my life remains frozen on those early years covering Coach Bryant. So I think that's understandable and easy to explain. And you juxtapose that with covering Nick Saban has truly been one of the most remarkable rides of anyone's life. It just so happens to have been mine. As far as the SEC Network, I don't want to say it was a difficult decision, because I couldn't resist the opportunity. And as much as I hated leaving Birmingham, and that was the difficult part. My wife is from there. I had spent most of my life there. But this experience, which is getting very close to 8 years now, I'll mark the eighth year in a couple of weeks, has just been extraordinary to look at the growth of this network, to see it on in homes and sports bars and restaurants and stadiums, not only in the SEC, but all across the country, has been incredibly gratifying. The SEC launch, for those of you who don't know, since ESPN launched, it's been the most successful cable launch in television history. And I think, a lot of people knocked it. And a lot of people wondered if it would ever work or whether this would ever work. And all I know is what we've all experienced here since the beginning.
Well, it's been nothing short of successful. That's probably not the right word to describe it, but to transition that into Alabama football, maybe just if Nick Saban were sitting in front of you, or vice versa right now, what are there any questions that you would ask? Is there anything that you're wondering? Is there anything left unanswered specifically about this next upcoming season pertaining to the program?
Yeah, Zach, let me two-part this answer again. I did a piece a couple of years ago for ESPN's Outside the Lines. It was a profile on Coach Saban. So I spent the day with him in Tuscaloosa. I spent another day with him just following him around at practice. And then I flew to Tuscaloosa one day and hung out with him again as he flew to Connecticut to do an all-day event at ESPN. So I'm answering it the question that way to say, in terms of anything but what's going on right now, in that much time, you ask all the questions there that you could possibly ever dream up. What continues to motivate me in terms of wanting to glean information from him now is what's driving him. And I think we got a pretty good understanding last year. Nick Saban did not like the fact that things shut down. And I don't mean that he was trying to buck the system in the sense that COVID overtook all of our lives, but that was very disruptive to him. And as you heard all year long, especially in the aftermath of the national title, he figured it out. He figured out a way to beat the system, and he did. And the evidence was on the field 2 months ago in Miami. Now, what drives him now is the same thing that's always driven him. It's he makes sure that he hits the reset button every year. He doesn't. He may have enjoyed last year more than any other championship, and I think he did. But it's a new year. It's a new slate. He has new coaches, new players, and that's what keeps him young.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you for talking with me, Paul. I love that.
Zach, that was fun. You should be a talk show host. You asked great questions, and were very patient with the very chatty guest that you had, which was me. We'll take a break. More to come in the next couple of hours. Bill Connelly will join us. We've already had Blake Topmeyer on, and we will continue with a lot more to do on a very interesting Wednesday afternoon.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We are back, and Chuck is up next as we continue. Hello, Chuck.
Hey, Paul. It's good to talk with you.
Thank you.
I'm one of the old guys. I go back a long ways. I remember in the Birmingham area, there used to be three sports reporters. I called them Cecil Hertz, Willie Lumphead, and Paul Feinbaum. In those days, you were pretty much an investigative reporter.
Right.
I think you pretty much came up with your own material. Today, you're on ESPN. And, you know, I spend too much time watching this stuff. But it seems to me that all the talking heads on ESPN say the same thing. For example, the Big Ten was the best conference in basketball this year, and yesterday Seth Greenberg, he stood by it, but he offered a whole lot of excuses as to why they were losing in the tournament. So I guess my question to you, Paul, and I ask this with all respect, is where do you get your information? For example, you say nobody's going to beat Gonzaga. Have you scouted Gonzaga, or how do you form that opinion?
Hey, Chuck. First of all, what you brought up here is quite interesting, and you are correct. I'll try to speak outside of my bubble here, and not as an ESPN employee and someone who, in my own season, is a talking head on those programs as well. But I probably should not have said what I did. I am basing that on my limited understanding of the game of basketball, and I'm no better or worse than the average fan. I don't have any expertise. I've covered it, I've watched it, but so have millions of people in the country. I'm basing that on really what I've seen and what I've heard. And what I've heard, to help your point, is the experts, and the experts being Billis and Greenberg and others, you know, with whom we talk to on this program. So it's an opinion. It means absolutely nothing based on what the experts predicted for the Final Four. And in the future, I probably should quote the experts as opposed to offer it as mine, because I really don't have any great insight.
Good response, but frequently the experts are reciting metrics, and you know, I go back to an old expression that says there are statistics, damn statistics, and lies. I don't know if that pertains.
But Chuck, remember something here. We are not sitting around debating medical science or precedent for a Supreme Court case. We are giving sports opinions, which everyone has, and most of us are wrong.
I will accept that. Paul, I appreciate you taking my call. I hope maybe in the future to talk with you. I'm an unusual guy in that I've been retired from the University of Alabama for 26 years, but I have 2 degrees from Notre Dame. So football in Tuscaloosa is a joy for me.
That is fantastic. What did you do at Alabama?
I was on the mechanical engineering faculty.
Okay. Well, that is fantastic. Well, that's another subject.
So now everybody in Tuscaloosa knows who's talking to you.
You got it. Hey, we'll call again soon, Chuck. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
You know, what Chuck has raised is a really interesting point. And I find myself in football season in normal times. I'm in New York. I'm in Connecticut. I made the mistake once, to be blunt with the audience, very early in my career. Someone asked me, I was on SportsCenter, and the host said, well, you know, what do you think about the Pac-12? And I said, well, first of all, I'm not an expert on the Pac-12. But I think USC is going to lose, and whatever happens. And one of my bosses grabbed me and he said, what are you doing? I said, well, what do you mean, what am I doing? He said, you are an expert. I said, well, no. He said, hey, you're sitting there on the set of SportsCenter being asked a question. Everyone thinks you're an expert. Act like an expert. Don't say you're not an expert. So it really is an interesting conversation about what most of us do. I am a talk show host. I am not a so-called expert. Now, I'm put in that position sometimes, and you have to marry the position. But as I said to Chuck, does it really matter? Did the smartest people in the world, when it comes to NFL football, get it right on Dak Prescott? No. They ignored him for the first couple of rounds of the draft. He just signed a $160 million contract. That happens all the time, though. So my argument back to all of you who want to put us in a box and say we don't know what we're talking about, well, maybe you're right, but we are just talking about things based on our experiences and based on what our eyes tell us. You know, some are better than others. Yeah, there's, you know, Jay Billis can break down a basketball game infinitely better than I can. I played basketball. I loved it. I was about as average as you can get for someone who looks like me. But, but I don't have any expertise in terms of looking at film and breaking it down and trying to sound like a coach. I host a show that leans heavily on guests and regular people to opine. That's what has made this show whatever it is. We'll take a break. Enough of me. More of you when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
And we have an update for you from the NCAA Women's Tournament. Just about final now. Let's see. Is it final? No. 32 seconds remaining. Oregon leads Georgia 54-48. Georgia was the runner-up, was third seed. I mean, it lost in the SEC tournament championship game and was given a pretty good chance of advancing far. Meanwhile, we have an update on the Jay Graham situation. This has been on the tip of a lot of tongues around the SEC today. The former Tennessee player and coach joined Nick Saban's staff 2 months ago. And we talked to Blake Topmeyer a couple of minutes ago, and he did not know what was going on. Some thought maybe it had a connection to the Tennessee situation, although others were warning us it does not. Well, we now have a better understanding of what's been going on. Jay Graham just tweeted that he will be seeking professional help to gain, I'm quoting now, a better understanding of mental health and to rebalance his life. He issued a statement in more detail. He's saying, I'm taking time away from football to seek professional help, immediately gain a better understanding of mental health, and spend time with loved ones. Let's get back to calls at 855-242-7285, and Thomas is up next. Hello, Thomas.
Hello, Paul. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I usually always try to get through on Veterans Day, and of course there's a lot of calls then, but I appreciate you recognize the veterans and just want to say go Army.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to make a comment and then a question. First of all, when I got out of the Army, I was able to coach high school sports for about 13 years, and then when my health deteriorated due to some of my injuries suffered in the Army, I started covering high school sports as a writer and went on to become a sports writer and sort of had a third career. But I just want to say that, you know, one of the things that I think that local newspaper work is able to do, and I certainly wouldn't advise any of my students or former players to enter the newspaper world, but, you know, we're still doing a great job, and I still work in Kentucky now that I moved from South Carolina as a sports writer. We're still doing a job, you know, telling those stories about those young kids. And I think it gives them an opportunity to be interviewed and just, you know, learn about sports. And, of course, no, all of them don't go on to college to play sports. But I think we provide a lot of good memories. And that's one way I think print journalism is still.
Yeah, Thomas, I'm glad you brought that up because I think, and, you know, a lot of people have simply said that the newspaper business is dead. And it's not completely dead, but it's close to death. However, because of digital, it remains alive. But, you know, I covered high school football early in my career, and I don't think I ever understood until later how much it meant, and you know it better than I do, to young people, whether the reporter showed up or the television truck or whatever, and it still matters. It's such a great motivating factor. It's for the parents, for the grandparents, the enrichment of knowing that their child, and I still view it as a wonderful profession in a small town. I talked to a friend of mine the other day who works for a two-man newspaper, two-person newspaper, I should say, even though there are two men, and it's. You know, it's still important in that community. And, you know, the big city papers are not as important as they used to be. But newspapers are both a cheerleader and a watchdog. And I think the death of them over the last 25 years has been very sad.
What a great comparison, a cheerleader and a watchdog. And you're absolutely right. And we're providing memories. That's what we're providing. But when I was a coach, I was fortunate enough to go 12-0, 8-4, and 4-6, and then I was looking for a job, like all coaches. But I wanted to talk about Calipari a minute. First of all, I'm smart enough not to want to say anything negative towards him, first of all, because of what a great coach he is, and second of all, because I'm a Kentucky fan, but my wife, I like where I live, and I don't want to get kicked out, and she is a big Calipari fan. But I think it was a telltale sign at the end of this year when he was interviewed and he started saying the things that, you know, all good coaches say, you know, we're preparing young men and we're preparing them for the future and everything. But, you know, our expectations as Kentucky fans obviously go higher than that. But my question to you, I guess if you could call it a question, is as a great a recruiter as he is, and we talked a little bit about him needing some good assistance, you know, the thing of this, is it time for him possibly to be looking for not just NBA players to say, hey, what I am diagrammed that worked so well in past seasons when, you know, it's been since 2015 for us to, you know, to really have the success we want, do I need to adjust? And then the other thing of it is it really smart for a team to give a coach, you know, basically a blank contract? Because I think we all need motivation. Does that make sense, Paul?
Thomas, it does. I hate to run here, but we're at the top of the hour. Thanks for sharing your background with us. And I agree with you on Kentucky, on Calipari. Sometimes you run out of motivation. It's hard to do it when you're on top.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.